الإذاعة الإلكترونية لجامعة العلوم والتكنولوجيا تقدم دراسات إدارية باللغة الإنجليزية. الإعداد والتقديم الأستاذ محمد شجاع الدين. الهندسة الصوتية محمد العلي. الإشراف الدكتور سمير الشميري. الإخراج رياض المحيي.
Dear students, Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Welcome to our audio programs. This is our sixth lesson on air. In the last session, you learned about mark to max. We also discussed different pricing strategies and methods, and also the rest component of the mark to max, including promotion, place, and product. By the end of this lesson, you should be able to answer the following question. What are the different types of organizational structures? What is human resource management? You will also learn about various theories of motivation and the leadership styles. Main points in this lesson are organization structures, including formal or traditional hierarchies, matrix structure, entrepreneurial structure, informal structure, motivation, human resource management and activities, leadership and management styles. Our first point in this lesson is about the organization structures. Businesses can adopt a number of structures according to the size of the company, the environment in which it operates, and the personal preferences of the shareholders and senior managers. Now we will discuss the first type of structures. One, formal or traditional hierarchies. The formal hierarchy has a structure that clearly defines rules for all employees and establishes their relationship with other employees in the business. This type of organization structure is usually based on departments and mostly depends on agreed procedures. Thus, it can be bureaucratic. Here are some features of this type of structures. It is a relatively tall hierarchy with narrow spans of control. The organization will be centralized with the most important decision taken by senior managers. Hierarchy is important and senior managers expect to be treated with respect. Tradition is important and change is often implemented slowly. There are some potential advantages of this type of structures as follows. First, traditional hierarchies allow specialists to operate within their area of expertise, for example, in marketing. They can generate new and very innovative ideas, but other areas of the business may be unaware of such developments. Second, employees understand lines of command and communication. Third, all employees appreciate the possibilities for promotion existing within the business. However, the disadvantages of this structure can become more apparent as the organization grows in size. There are some possibilities. Departments may bid for resources in an attempt to increase their prestige within the business rather than benefiting the organization. As the business becomes larger, decision making can become slower as communication has to pass through many layers. Coordinating the business attempts to achieve its objectives become difficult. Senior managers become remote and may take decisions inappropriate to local situations, or to the needs of particular groups of customers. Finally, traditional organization structure can be found in the following types of businesses. Long-established businesses that usually includes a lot of layers. Family businesses that operate on relatively small scale. Number two, matrix structures. Matrix structure is referred to as task-oriented, which is developed to overcome many of the problems associated with the traditional or hierarchical structure. It is a combination of a vertical chain of command operated through departments and horizontal organization of project or product teams. Businesses using matrix structures develop teams of individuals with relevant specialist skills necessary to complete a given project. The aim is to allow all individuals to use their talents effectively, irrespective of their position within the organization. For example, a marketing manager may use the expertise of a sales staff to better develop marketing strategies. Matrix structures focus on the task in hand. Launching a new product, opening new retail outlets, closing down factories, or entering overseas. Advantages of this type of structure are: focuses on tasks necessary for business success. Encourages organization to be flexible and responsive to customers' needs. Motivates and develops employees by providing varied and challenging tasks. There are also some possible disadvantages as follows. Employees may have divided responsibilities, adding more load to their work. Conflict can occur between project and departmental managers, reducing the performance of the organization. Heavy expenditure on support staff may be required. 3. Entrepreneurial structures. Entrepreneurial structure is found in businesses that operate in competitive markets and mostly in those where rapid decisions are essential. News organizations, for example, Sky News, often operate with an entrepreneurial structure. A few key workers at the core of the organization make all the major decisions and are often the owners in the case of small businesses. The business is heavily dependent upon the knowledge and skills of these key workers. Now, when to use entrepreneurial structures? Entrepreneurial structures are suitable to markets where rapid decisions are essential and where organizations are small enough to be controlled effectively by a few trusted employees. However, there are some drawbacks to this type of structure, and its effectiveness depends upon two factors. One, the quality of management and decision-making by the core employees. Two, core employees usually face difficulties in managing the business if it grows bigger and accordingly have to adopt another structure. Four, informal structure. Organizations that do not have an obvious structure usually adopt informal structure. This is common in the case of professional practices. Lawyers, for example, operate as a team. The professionals normally receive administrative support from others within the organization. This form of organizational structure allows highly trained and motivated employees to organize their working lives and to take decisions independently. However, it is less appropriate for many businesses as it lacks coordination and control by senior managers. Finally, it's important to know that organizational structures can be affected by both internal and external factors. Examples of internal factors are the organizational culture and the strategic objectives of the firm. External factors such as intensive competitive pressures that may encourage delayering in an effort to reduce costs. Rapid change may require a matrix structure to ensure that the organization can remain competitive. Now, dear students, we come to the second part of the lesson in which we will discuss the different theories of motivation. Before we start with theories, we need to know what motivation means in business. Motivation describes the factors within individuals that arouse, maintain, and channel behaviors towards a goal. More simply, it is the will to work. This definition assumes that motivation can either lie within employees or is the result of some external stimuli. Why is it important to have motivated employees? The reason why motivation is of great importance to any business is due to the following. A low level of absenteeism by employees at all levels within the business. Relatively few employees deciding to leave the organization given a low level of labor turnover. Good industrial relation and high levels of productivity from the labor force. How can businesses motivate employees? There are different views on what motivates people at work. The varying reasons why people work highlight the theories put forward by the various schools of thought on motivation. Schools of thought are individuals and groups who hold similar views on a particular matter. In this case, what motivates employees? There are the most famous schools of thought holding theories of motivation. First, scientific school. Developed by Frederick Winslow Tyler, this school suggests that motivation is an external factor achieved through money. Employees should be closely supervised and paid according to PE's rate. This means the more they work, the more they are paid. This school also assumes that time and motion studies determine efficient means of production and workers are trained and told how to operate. Second, human relations school. A fundamental weakness of the scientific school was that its work ignored the social needs of employees. This, and the obvious unpopularity of the ideas of Tyler, led to the development of the human relations school. This school of thought concentrated on the sociological aspects of work. Its foremost members was an Australian-born psychologist, Elton Mayer, 1880 to 1949. Initially, Mayer was one of Tyler's disciples, believing in the importance of scientific management to business efficiency. However, he emphasized on social needs neglected by the scientific school. This brought sociological theory into management and accepted that employees could be motivated by meeting those social needs. More attention was given to the social dimensions of work. Example, communication, working as groups and consultation between managers and employees. Third, the new human relations school. Key theorists are Abraham Maslow and Frederick Herzberg. The new human relations school considered the psychological aspects of employment. This school argued that motivation lies within each individual employee. Managers merely need the key to unlock the motivational force. By focusing on the psychological needs of employees, Maslow and Herzberg encouraged managers to treat the employees as individuals with different needs and aspirations. Their work emphasized that, because people are different, the techniques required to motivate individuals will also differ. Let us see how Maslow differentiated workers according to different needs. Here we will discuss each of Maslow's level of needs and the means of satisfying these needs. 1. Physiological needs. Examples, food, water, shelter, clothing. This is through pay and warm and dry working environment. Number 2. Security needs. Examples, a safe and secure working environment of employees. And this is through implementing a proper health and safety policy, providing employees with contracts of employment. 3. Social needs. Examples, contract and friendships with other employees. This is going to be through social and sporting facilities, opportunities to work in groups. 4. STEAM needs. Examples, achievement, recognition, and self-respect. This is through delegating authority to junior employees, offering promotion opportunities. 5. Self-actualization. Examples: to fulfill one's potential completely. This is through providing opportunities to take new responsibilities and to develop new skills. By this, we have discussed main schools of theories. It is also important to mention that there are some other ways used to stir up needed motivation in the workplace, some of which are profit sharing, share ownership, piecework, and performance-related pay. You may refer to your textbook for more details. Now, dear students, we come to the third part of this lesson, human resource management and activities. What is meant by human resource management? Human resource management is the process of making the most efficient use of an organization's personnel, and it covers a wide range of activities, including assessing future labor needs, recruitment and selection, training, appraisal, motivation and reward of employees. One of the initial tasks of the human resource management is planning for workforce. Before a business recruits or trains employees, it must establish future labor needs. This is not simply a matter of recruiting sufficient employees. Those recruited must have the right skills and experience to help the organization achieve its corporate objectives. Human resource management views activities relating to the workforce as integrated and vital in helping the organization to achieve its objectives. People are viewed as important resources to be developed through training. Thus, policies relating to recruitment and training, for example, should be formulated as part of a coordinated human resource strategy. To know how the human resource management works, we need to look first at the corporate objectives. According to the corporate objectives, the demand for labor will be determined. This includes the number of workers required, skills required, and the location of the employees. Then comes supplying of labor, as from where the company can find the needed employees. Possible sources can be the existing workforce. This also includes skimming the right skills needed. At the end, human resource plan is set, and it may require the use of one or more of the following: recruitment, training, redundancy, and redeployment. Now, what do recruitment and selection mean? Recruitment and selection is the process of filling an organization's job vacancies by appointing new staff. This starts with drawing up job descriptions and personal specifications. Job descriptions list the duties and responsibilities associated with a particular job. So, companies first draw up job descriptions and personal specifications and advertise such needs either inside the organization or outside. Later, managers receive applications and shortlist the number of applicants according to preferences in competencies and skills as specified in the job descriptions. Finally, candidates are selected. Second main task is training. Companies develop certain programs through which employees are hoped to acquire skills and knowledge. This process is known as training. Training is of paramount importance, as it can help workers to develop and assess the organization in achieving its objectives. Types of training include off-the-job training. This involves training outside the workplace, either at a college, university, or some other training agency. Off-the-job training can take the form of external courses in the form of lectures and seminars, self-study, or open learning. On-the-job training. This form of training does not require the employee to leave the workplace. Employees learn from experienced employees through observations and work shadowing. Finally, Organizations may need to lay off some of its workforce or replace their positions. This is known as redeployment and redundancy. Redeployment occurs when an employee is moved from one job to another within the same organization. This occurs because the employee's performance is unsatisfactory or because the job no longer exists. On the other hand, an employee is made redundant when the job no longer exists and therefore work is not available for the person who holds that post. Companies should maintain the good work for their staff by training and developing proper evaluation methods needed to stimulate high performance. Now, dear students, we come to the last part of this lesson, leadership and management styles. How is leadership different from management? Management is a process of setting objectives and making the most efficient use of financial, human, and physical resources to achieve these objectives. Key tasks include planning, organizing, controlling, and coordination. Leadership, on the other hand, is influencing others to achieve certain aims or objectives. In light of this, good and effective leadership skills can help a manager to carry out their duties. In today's business, there is a tendency among companies to bring these rules together and present managers as leaders. What do leaders usually do? Leaders or managers have a broad range of duties. Their tasks may include decision objectives for the company. Leaders have to establish a sense of direction for the company, providing expertise and setting standards for the organization. The leader will have to show enthusiasm in difficult times and take a major role in solving problems. Convincing opinions and deciding structure. Leader will play a key role in determining the structure of the organization and in shaping the culture of the business. What are the different leadership styles used by companies? There are three basic leadership styles. These are autocratic or authoritarian leadership, paternalistic leadership, democratic leadership. Let's see how these leadership styles differ. First, authoritarian leadership. Senior managers adopting this style take the decisions with little involvement of junior employees. Only senior managers and those in top management can set objectives and allocate tasks. The way information flows within the company is a one-way communication downwards from leader to subordinate. However, this style might be useful when quick decisions are required or when large number of unskilled employees are needed. Second, paternalistic leadership. Although this style is dictatorial, the decisions are still taken in the best interest of the employees. In this style, managers usually explain decisions and ensures employees' social and leisure needs are met. The communication used here is generally from leader downwards, though some feedback takes place. In general, this style can appear democratic, but it is really autocratic leadership with a human face. Third, democratic leadership. In this style, managers run the business on the basis of majority decisions. Managers encourage employees to take part in decision-making and use delegation. The communication used by this style is quite extensive, adopting two-way communication between senior and junior employees. This style of leadership is useful when complex decisions are made, requiring a range of specialist skills. Finally, it's important to mention that there is not a single perfect style of leadership. It may be that the best managers are those who adopt a style suitable to the circumstances. Thus, the most talented managers might be the most versatile and flexible, able to call on one or more styles according to the given situations they face. Douglas McGregor's Theory X and Y. Douglas was an American psychologist who researched into management in large companies. His work set out the leadership style, which is likely to introduce methods of motivation proposed by Maslow and Herzberg compared to the leadership styles. This was later known as Theory X and Y. In Theory X, leaders tend to believe that the average employee dislikes work and will avoid it if possible. People must be controlled and directed and punished if necessary to put in a real effort at work. The typical worker wants to avoid responsibility and has little ambition. Employees look for security above all else at work. On the other hand, Theory Y leaders tend to believe that working is as natural as play or rest for the average employee. The typical worker does not have an inbuilt dislike of work. Other means exist to motivate workers rather than control and punishment. In the right circumstances, workers seek responsibility. Most employees have imagination and creativity that may be used to help organizations achieve their goals. Finally, it's important that managers can be goal-oriented in the way they run their business. This is known as management by objectives, or MBO, which was first introduced by Bertha Drucker. According to Drucker's theory of management by objectives, managers should identify and agree targets for achievement with subordinates. Negotiate the support that will be required to achieve these targets. Evaluate over time the extent to which these objectives are met. By this, dear students, we come to the end of the lesson. Let's sum up main points in the lesson. We first discussed different organization structures. These include the following. 1. Formal or traditional hierarchies. This includes both fat and tall hierarchies. 2. Matrix structures. This structure is referred to as task-oriented. It is a combination of vertical chain of command operated through departments and horizontal organization of project or product teams. 3. Entrepreneurial structures. Entrepreneurial structure is found in businesses that operate in competitive markets and mostly in those where rapid decisions are essential. 4. Informal structure. Companies that do not have an obvious structure usually adopt these kind of structures. In the second point, we discussed the different theories of motivation. We found that theories used by companies regarding how to motivate their staff were developed and tested in schools of thought. Famous schools of thought are 1. Scientific school, which suggests that motivation is an external factor achieved through money. Employees should be closely supervised and paid according to piece rate. 2. Human relations school. This school of thought concentrated on the sociological aspects of work. Its foremost members was an Australian-born psychologist, Alton Mayer. Initially, he was one of Taylor's disciples, believing in the importance of scientific management to business efficiency. This school emphasized on social needs neglected by the scientific school. 3. The New Human Relations School. This school argued that motivation lies within each individual employee. Managers merely need the key to unlock the motivational force. Our third point was about the human resource management and its activities. It was found that human resource management is the process of making the most efficient use of an organization's personnel, and it covers a wide range of activities including assessing future labor needs, recruitment and selection, training, appraisal, motivation, and reward of employees. Our last point was about the various leadership and management styles. Leadership is influencing others to achieve certain aims or objectives. The three basic leadership styles: autocratic or Authoritarian leadership. Paternalistic leadership. Democratic leadership. These leadership styles are different as in to what extent are employees part of decisions, how communication flows, and when to be used. Similarly, Douglas McGregor developed another theory called Theory X and Y. His work set out the leadership style which is likely to introduce the methods of motivation proposed by Maslow and Herzberg, compared to other leadership styles. This was later known as Theory X and Y. The last point was about managing business by objectives, as to be objectives-oriented when operating. Dear students, we hope you get the ultimate benefits from these lessons. We also advise you to read your textbooks for more details and examples. Thank you for listening. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
دراسات إدارية باللغة الإنجليزية. الإعداد والتقديم الأستاذ محمد شجاع الدين. الهندسة الصوتية محمد العلي. الإشراف الدكتور سمير الشميري. الإخراج رياض المحيي.